Who are you and what are you doing here?
Hi, everybody.
Well, what are we waiting for?
This is fantastic.
Hello, hello, hello.
This will only hurt for 22 minutes.
It's very early. I may have to hurt you. Call me in 5 minutes.
This is something that is treatable. This is something that is fixable.
Hey, this is not a test.
Oh, my God, it's early.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
And welcome to Broker Talk. This is our first live episode. My name is Michael. I am the lead consultant with Taltua and the host of Broker Talk. I'm glad you've joined us. Now, what exactly is Broker Talk? Let's talk about that for a moment. Broker Talk is a weekly internet radio program that you can hear on Blog Talk Radio. We get together every week. We talk about things concerning the transportation industry. Specifically, though, we will be talking about things concerning freight brokers. We are going to have interviews, be talking to a lot of different people, taking your calls, your questions, discussion, bouncing things off the wall, see what sticks. And pretty much just having a good time. Now, first up on tonight's Broker Talk, the article from January 5th in the Wall Street Journal. Now, before I get into that, if you'd like to call in, you can. 646-787-8296 is our studio number. 646-787-8296. It might be a little bit before we get to your calls, but if you want to get lined up, that's the number to call. Okay, back to the Wall Street Journal. Retailers and manufacturers grappling with an unusually tight trucking market are paying the steepest prices in years to get their freight moved. Yeah, play cut three.
Are the things that we're seeing in the industry today representing a new normal in the transportation industry? Well, 2 weeks into 2018, guess what? The answer to that question is a resounding yes. It's not just because of things like the Wall Street Journal publishing an article on January 6th that talked about how difficult it is for shippers and retailers to find trucks at a reasonable price. There are a whole bunch of things going on. And so when you see things like the cold snap that hit us at the end of 2017 and 2018 and how it sent rates for refrigerated trucks through the roof, you have to understand, folks, we are not necessarily looking at conditions which represent an aberration. In the new normal, there are some imperative questions that you must consider. Question number one is, how good is your data? One of the things that we're seeing is that the carriers are coming to shippers and they are armed with a bunch of data that tells them exactly what you're putting on their truck. It tells them the exact length of haul they're going and all the peripheral activities that impact the cost for them to service your account. And guess what? Every one of them is committed to getting a reasonable return on their investment because in this environment, they can do that. The second thing you need to take a look at, though, is how are you utilizing that carrier's truck? In particular, what happens when a carrier shows up at your facility or the facility of one of your suppliers or customers? If you don't understand that, then you're not going to be prepared when you have negotiations with carriers over the rates they're going to charge. And that brings me to my third and final point. If you're serious about reducing your transportation costs, folks, it isn't going to happen by simply demanding lower rates from the carriers. It's going to happen because of the operational improvements you make in your practices and processes.
Okay, that clip came from DCV TV. Now, that clip is talking about what shippers can do to protect themselves from higher rates. And if you got what I got out of that clip and what they're talking about, simply put, there's nothing a shipper can do to protect themselves from higher rates. It's here. It's the new normal. Deal with it. Now, back to the Wall Street Journal article. He goes on to say freight demand has been ticking up for months, closely tracking the strengthening U.S. economy. The market got a boost from retailers needing to restock stores and distribution centers amid the biggest jump in holiday sales since 2011. That wave of demand hit the trucking market just as the new federal safety rule kicked in. We're talking about ELDs here, electronic logging devices, leading some drivers to idle their big rigs. Now, going back to the article we posted on our website today, Taltoa.com, that's what we talked about, how there is a twofold effect causing the rates to go up. First of all, capacity. There aren't enough trucks to handle the capacity. Now, throw in this new ELD mandate, and drivers are not able to make the money they were able to make because they can't drive as many miles. A driver gets paid by the mile. So obviously, if a driver can't drive as many miles per day, they're making less money. This brings into play the driver shortage. There's always been a driver shortage. But now, this driver shortage is going to get, it's going to go through the roof if somebody doesn't step in and do something. Trucking companies, what are they doing to combat this ELD driver shortage problem? Well, about the only thing they can do is increase drivers' pay. Get that pay up enough so the driver is at least able to make the same amount of money prior to the new ELD mandate. So you take the driver pay, take the capacity issue problem, in other words, not enough trucks. A trucking company is raising their rates because they know the capacity is not there to meet the demand, then add to that their need to increase driver pay to not only attract drivers, but to retain the drivers. There's only one place this money can come from: the shipper. Now back to the Wall Street Journal article. Now remember, this is January 5th. It goes on to say, by the end of last week, just one truck was available for every 12 loads needing to be shipped according to online freight marketplace DAT. That is the most unbalanced market since October 2005. And we all know what 2005 was. October 2005 was post-Hurricane Katrina. Now, some companies are delaying non-essential shipments rather than what the Wall Street Journal says, scramble to find a truck. What they actually mean is they are delaying non-essential shipments, hoping that the rate comes back down to what it once was. Folks, I don't believe that's going to happen. Now, other shippers are paying a premium to ensure trucks will be waiting at their warehouses when they need the truck. The cost to hire the most common type of big rig, that's Wall Street Journal talk for big truck, shot up to $2.11 per mile. Now, when they say the most common type, they're obviously talking about dry vans. Now, that $2.11 a mile, that included the fuel surcharge. In the week ending December 30th, a 3.5-year high. That's according to DAT. There's a shortage of trucks available. There's delays in shipping. That according to one DAT analyst. Some loads that have to move right now are paying extremely high rates. Yeah, play cut number one.
They say truckers drive the American economy. If that's the case, we could be in trouble. 50,000 more drivers are needed by the end of 2017, and that number could more than triple in 10 years.
When we're buying more stuff out there, whether that's cars, refrigerators, you name it, we're putting that in trucks, and that's going to exacerbate the shortage that we have.
Demographics are largely behind the shortfall, but the lifestyle, including extended periods away from home, can also be a major deterrent.
There's a sense that people just don't want to be truck drivers. Why do you think that is?
It's a hard life. I mean, you know, I got a 36-inch box that I'm sleeping in the back of my truck most nights. Let me fix something.
We met Greg Gettenberg waiting for his rig to be repaired at Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop outside Davenport, Iowa. He's made life on the road work for his family.
I think if they want to hire more drivers, they're going to have to increase the pay.
Fleets are raising wages and offering incentives to attract drivers, but pressure to keep shipping costs down has also put a damper on compensation. LinkedIn's Chip Cutter.
If we look at the federal data, a truck driver in 2006 was actually making more than he or she would be making in 2016 if you factor in the cost of living. It's a couple $100 difference, but still, it shows that wages really have not meaningfully increased to address the shortage.
That data puts median driver pay just over $41,000. So many see trucking as a road to a better life. The industry just needs to convince tens of thousands more to hit the road.
Okay, that report from CBS News way back in October. A truck and driver shortage. 3 months before this Wall Street Journal article came out. In that story from CBS, it states that the driver's average income is $41,000. That's under the old paper logbook rule. A driver gets paid according to the mileage driven. So if the load's going 1,000 miles, the trucking company's paying that driver 40 cents a mile, that driver is going to make $400 on that load. But it's going to take him longer to get those miles in due to the new ELD mandate. Now, how is it going to take longer? Why is it going to take longer? Same amount of miles. It can be driven legally. The thing is, the ELD, electronic logging devices, there is no making adjustments. It is what it is. Not to mention the cost to a trucking company to add these units and pay a monthly fee for their use. A driver stuck in a traffic jam for 2 hours. For whatever reason, if he's behind that wheel, even though he's not moving, it's dead stop traffic. The driver is being penalized for that stoppage because he's behind the wheel, truck is in gear, ELD's recording. He will never get that time back. So therefore, the amount of hours that the driver has to drive that day is cut by whatever hours he or she was delayed in that traffic jam, even though they weren't doing anything. Now, if that driver would have gotten off the road, out of his truck, trucks in park, yeah, they would not be penalized. Except, once the day starts, according to that ELD, that's when the day starts, the driver has 14 hours to get their 11 hours in. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent, drivers have, in the past, adjusted their logbooks to get that time back. Legal? No. Minor infringement, adjusting the logbook so you can get the work in that you would have gotten in had it not been for whatever delay. Now, this is true, too. Driver responsibility. If a driver is tired, they need to pull over, get off the road, take a nap. Most drivers will, but some don't, and here we are. Now back to the Wall Street Journal article. Trucking companies are responding to strong demand by ordering more trucks from manufacturers. Okay, demand, that's the capacity. Fleets reserved 37,500 Class 8 trucks, big trucks, in December. That is the most in a single month in 3 years. That's according to ACT Research. So trucking companies know that they need to increase their capacity. They're buying more trucks. But they also know they've got to raise the rates to be able to pay the driver. In addition to that, the capacity at this level, but freight is at a higher level, so you have a supply and demand issue. So what that means, if a shipper wants to attract a truck, they not only have to pay a higher rate to get that truck due to the supply and demand issue, but they also have to provide more money so that the trucking company can pay the driver more to get their wages back up to what they would have been prior to the ELD mandate. Freight demand strengthened in recent months as manufacturing activity expanded and retailers stocked up for the holiday. Year-end sales soared past expectations, growing at their fastest pace since 2011. The new mandate may have, according to the Wall Street Journal, may have exacerbated the capacity crunch. Starting in December, most trucks had to be equipped with the ELDs. These ELDs monitor drivers' hours behind the wheel. The rule is meant to reduce accidents stemming from driver fatigue by increasing compliance with existing limits on driving time. Hence, driver regulations, logbooks. Back in September of last year, Steve Lucci of Fox News spoke to Matt Garnett about driver regulation and logbooks. Let's take a listen.
Regulation run amok. One truck driver says the federal government is literally telling him when he has to work, eat, and sleep. Matthew Garnett writing in The Federalist, quote, "I never thought I'd come to a time in my life when Big Brother would be watching me 24/7, but then I became a truck driver. Every minute of every day is monitored by Uncle Sam, who takes care that I can never make a decision for myself based on circumstances." Here to tell us more about the regulations he faces every day is truck driver Matthew Garnett. He is also the host of the podcast In Layman's Terms. Matthew, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
It's great to have you. You know, when politicians go on television and say, we really need to reduce the number of regulations, you know firsthand, because the trucking industry is, in your estimation, so completely overregulated. For instance, I have one watch. Right now it's 7:25. How many different clocks do you have in your life?
Well, I have that one plus four more. So, I mean, if you recall Orwell's 1984, they had the screens where, you know, Big Brother is watching you. I have a version of that in my truck. And so when I start working for the day, two of those clocks start in addition to the one you're fighting. And then when I start driving, another two start. So that's what's going on. And, you know, when you guys are in a rush to try to get the work on time and that sort of thing, that's kind of how a truck driver feels all the time.
Okay. So at what point, Matthew, does, according to the federal government, your clock run out for the day where you've got to pull over, even though for one reason or another, you might have only been driving for a couple hours?
Well, let's say, for instance, I mean, this would never happen, but let's say, for instance, I got stuck at a shipper for 10 hours,
right,
for some reason,
okay,
you know, at a dock. Well, literally, I would only have 4 hours left to drive. Now, I'm not going to try to take you through all the hours of service regulations. There's parts about it I still don't understand.
Right.
But those running clocks reduce the amount of time that you're allowed to be on the road. Once
okay.
those clocks run out, you have to stop driving.
Sure. And I understand there are also regulations on off-duty time. So if you're not on duty, let's say this weekend, it's your off-duty time. And you can't mow the yard, you can't take out the garbage, you can't do stuff like that in your off-duty time, according to Uncle Sam?
Well, if a state trooper really wanted to throw the book at you, you know, they could ask you about that sort of thing. There are nightmarish things that happen like that. So, for instance, one of my colleagues one time sent an email to his dispatcher when he was on off-duty time. That's a violation. He got fined for that.
Unbelievable.
So if it was discovered, yeah, that I was working on off-duty time, it just depends on who you run into out there.
Yeah.
That it can happen. That's the regulations.
Ultimately, one of the reasons you're sounding this clarion call is because you say a lot of these regulations are making us less safe. How so?
Right. Well, so for instance, you know, you're fighting the clock. You're already 5 minutes late to work, and you got another 5 miles to go.
Yep.
We feel that way all the time. We always feel like we're in a rush because of these clocks. I mean, that's just human nature. That's the instinct that kicks in when you're fighting clocks. And then on top of that, while you're fighting the clock, sometimes you're fighting fatigue because
right.
that little computer there literally is telling you when it's time to sleep. When that thing runs out, it's time to sleep.
Yeah.
When you have more time, it's time to drive. And so you're put in situations that just literally force you to do that.
Okay, that's Matt Garnack talking about the driver regulations and logbooks with Steve Lucci of Fox News. Now, I think Matt got kind of caught up in the TV thing, but pretty much what he said was right on track. Now back to the Wall Street Journal article. Analysts expect some drivers will now cover fewer miles a day because the devices, the ELDs, make it easier for law enforcement to know when truckers have exceeded federal limits on driving time. Now this goes back to pretty much what Matt was talking about. If he was stuck at a shipper for 10 hours. Well, first of all, I'd never go back to that shipper again, and they should be getting some type of detention pay, but that's a story for another day. But the thing was, his log, the ELD, it started keeping track of time at whatever time he started that truck, put it in gear. That's the 14-hour start point. So if he's stuck at a shipper for 10 hours, yeah, he's only got 4 hours of driving work time left for that day. You see, it just don't make any sense. It's penalizing the driver for something that really isn't anything. Because if a driver's stuck at a shipper for 10 hours, I guarantee you, 9 of those hours are going to be in the sleeper berth. Now, back to the Wall Street Journal. For example, in the past few weeks, the price to ship freight between 500 miles and 750 miles, now remember, this is back January 5th, shot up 30% on some of the routes. Stricter timekeeping, routes of that length might take 2 days instead of one, forcing companies needing next day delivery to hire team drivers. So what's the single driver to do? Take a cut in pay. Hey, we appreciate it, but this is what you're going to get. Not going to happen for the simple reason, if that was to happen, trucking companies would have empty trucks all over the place and no drivers. Anyway, we started off with that on this week's Broker Talk. It's all over the news right now. If you haven't seen it, I don't know how you're missing it. you can do a search on the internet about freight rates, trucking, anything like that, transportation, logistics. This is the talk of the day. Rates are going up. Shippers are having a hard time adjusting, but they will. Trucking companies need to keep the ball in their court. This is the first time that I can remember where trucking companies, large and small, were all on the same page. Rates have to go up. Rates go up. Drivers make more money, don't have to work as hard. Trucking companies are going to make more. And brokers will make more as well. Rates go up, everybody wins. Now, the shipper will obviously have to pass the higher rates on to their customers. And no shipper wants to call their customer and say, hey, look, we're going to have to raise the rates for transportation for the simple reason, blah, blah, blah. Nobody wants to do that. But they're going to have to. All right, this is Broker Talk Radio. My name is Michael, the lead consultant with Taltoa. Matter of fact, Broker Talk is produced by Taltoa. Going to be talking about freight brokering. If you have a minute, you want to call in, ask questions, be part of the discussion, you can do that. 646-787-8296, 646-787-8296. Broker Talk. We'll be back with your calls and talking about becoming a freight broker or freight broker agent, which is the right for you. That's coming up on the other side of the break.
Being around too much loud noise like a leaf blower or rock concert can cause permanent hearing loss. And once it's gone, you can't get it back. Hearing loss is the third most common chronic health condition in the U.S. Almost twice as many people report hearing loss as diabetes or cancer. The louder a sound is, and the longer you're exposed to it, the more likely it will damage your hearing. Repeated exposure to noise can cause stress, anxiety, depression, high blood pressure, heart disease, and many other problems. Hearing loss from loud noise at home and in the community can be prevented. Avoid noisy places. Use earplugs, protective earmuffs, or noise-canceling headphones when near loud noises. Keep the volume down when watching TV or listening to music and using earbuds or headphones. Get your hearing checked and ask your healthcare provider how to protect your hearing from noise. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/vital signs.
Welcome back to Broker Talk. My name is Michael. I'm your host. I am the lead consultant for Taltoa. I train and consult freight brokers, freight broker agents, trucking companies. I deal with a lot of corporate clients, but I also work with a lot of freight broker agents. We've been doing this for well over 20 years. We've consulted freight brokers, trucking companies, freight broker agents, the whole nine yards. First of all, it's important to understand that we are a consulting firm, not a, quote, freight broker training school, unquote. Even though we do offer in-depth training, all of the training is within our consulting package. It's part of the package. Now, not a day goes by that I don't at least talk to one person that wants to start their own freight brokerage. And that's fine. We want you to. But we want you to do it the right way. Nine times out of ten, we will recommend that you start as a freight broker agent. A freight broker agent is doing the same thing, basically the same thing as a freight broker, without all the responsibility, without all the liability, and without all the expense. In other words, you can start out as a freight broker agent, gain the experience, build your customer base, build your business, and when you have that business built to a level that would sustain you for becoming your own freight brokerage company, when you've got it built to that point, then get your freight broker license and start operating under your own authority. Because all the customers that you've built, they are your customers. As a freight broker agent, you're not an employee. You're contracted to an existing freight broker to work under that freight broker's license. So as a freight broker agent, you're finding your shippers, getting loads from your shippers, and finding trucks to move those loads. As you move a load, you're going to make your money just like the freight broker would. You're going to make a commission on each and every load. Now, that is normally called load net. Some brokers call it gross net, gross income, whatever you want to call it, same thing. That is the difference between what the shipper paid you to move a load and what you paid the truck. So, for example, you had a shipper that had a load going from point A to point B, and they agreed to pay $1,000 to move that load. Now, through your efforts, you find a truck, and that truck, you've negotiated a rate, and you've agreed to pay that truck $800. So the shipper is paying you $1,000, you're paying the truck $800. $200 would be the load net on that one load. Now, yes, if you were the broker, you would keep 100% of that $200. But keep in mind, you've got overhead. You've got expenses. And those can be quite large. In addition to that, you have the responsibility to pay that truck normally before you see a dime from the shipper. So you got to be ready for that. Now, as a broker agent, you would earn, and the standard commission for an agent is 60% of load net. So if that load that we're using, that as an example, had a $200 net, you would earn 60% of that $200. So you would earn $120 for moving that load from point A to point B. Okay, well and good, right? So why don't I just start out as a freight broker and I'm able to retain that full $200? Because it takes time to build that business. You're not going to start brokering tomorrow and be making money overnight. You've got to build the business. You've got to find your customers. You've got to build that relationship. Start getting loads. You got to start networking. You got to start working with trucking companies. You've got to literally build that business. You've got to make a lot of phone calls to start. Now, let's say you want to forgo all that. You want to be a broker. Okay. If you want to start out as a freight broker, you will have to get your license. That is commonly known as your authority. So you'll file the paperwork. You'll need your freight broker license, UCR, BOC3, and a $75,000 property broker surety bond, and that's just to be legal. Now, a lot of people don't know what that bond is for. Well, here's some audio from Lance Surety Bonds talking about freight broker bonds, that $75,000 bond.
I'm on my way to becoming a freight broker, but before I get my license, I was told I needed a freight broker bond. Do you know what a freight broker bond is and how I can obtain one?
Sure, I do. First, let's start with a basic definition.
If you've never heard of the term freight broker bond, keep in mind that it can also be referred to as a BMC 84 surety bond, trucking surety bond, and a transportation broker surety bond. It also used to be known as an ICC surety bond. Freight broker bonds are required by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration to make sure that freight brokers keep their contractual agreements with shippers and carriers. Imagine the following situation. A motor carrier fulfills their obligation towards the freight broker by delivering a piece of cargo, but the freight broker is either delaying or refusing payment. In that case, the freight broker bond will go into effect and compensate the carrier.
Why is my credit score so important?
Bonding companies take an owner's credit score into account as it can be a reflection of their ability to stay on top of their financial responsibilities. This particular bond is in place to guarantee that shippers and motor carriers are paid on time by freight brokers. There is often a correlation between an owner's credit and the likelihood of triggering a claim. If there is a claim against you, it is the surety bond company's responsibility to financially compensate for all losses you inflicted. Therefore, they're more likely to issue bonds to people with clean credit history.
I see. Does that mean I can't get a bond if I have bad credit?
No. Applicants with bad credit can usually get a freight broker bond, but they may have to pay a slightly higher price for it to compensate the surety for the additional risk.
Can you tell me more about how much the bond costs?
Sure. As you may have heard, in October 2013, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration raised the amount of the freight broker to $75,000 instead of the $10,000 that were in place since the 70s.
Wait, $75,000? I don't have that kind of money.
Relax. You don't have to pay the full amount unless you go into a trust fund, which is inadvisable because it will tie up your money and you won't have any access to them. With a freight broker bond, you only pay an annual premium, which is a small percentage of the $75,000. Normally, applicants with clean credit history may pay between 2 and 5%. Freight brokers with damaged credit can see quotes between 5 and 13%.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Basically, the property broker surety bond, the $75,000 bond, it's an assurance for the trucking company that they're going to get paid for moving one of your loads if you don't pay the trucking company. They file a claim on the bond for whatever you had agreed to pay them. Okay, now let's assume, for all practical purposes, you've got the capital. You're financially sound. You're ready to start your own freight brokerage. You can afford it. Okay, just to be legal, authority, which is your license, UCR BOC3 $75,000 bond. But you're going to need some type of freight broker management software. And you're going to need to take into consideration how many people are going to be using that software. Actually, you're going to lease it. Usually, you're going to have it on a server that is provided by whoever is leasing you the software. The days are pretty much gone where you buy it and install it, although you still can. Probably wouldn't want to because of the expense. Now, you want to have people be able to access your freight broker management system, especially if they are outside of your office. In other words, if you are utilizing freight broker agents, they need to be able to access. So for every person that is going to have access to your system, you are going to be paying for each individual person. This is a per seat charge. Most freight broker management systems, that's how they work. There are some out there. It's one fee, covers it all. And you may start with that, but trust me, you're going to move into the higher price systems. Now, in addition to that, you'll need load boards. DAT power, truck stop, whatever boards you're going to be using. And you're going to be paying per seat, again, for whoever has access to the load board that you're paying for. Now, you've got the capital, you can pay the trucks, no sweat. But you don't have a credit rating yet for your brokerage. A lot of trucking companies will not work with a broker that has been in business for less than a year. The simple reason, you have no true credit rating as a broker. That's going to be an uphill battle. And we consult our clients on that. We show them how to get around it. In short, a lot of that is offering loan advances, quick pay, things of that nature, but there's other ways as well. So you need to be prepared for all that. Now, starting out as an agent, you're not going to worry about any of that. The broker's established. They have a credit rating. They have their systems in place. This is going to allow you to focus on building your business without all of the other obstacles. Now, during that period that you're building your business, you're getting shippers, you're moving loads, you're making money, you're working with trucking companies. That affords you the opportunity to start building relationships with those carriers so that when you do go out on your own and get your own freight broker license, you've got the relationships. The credit issue that I was talking about a moment ago, not that big of a deal now. Okay, keep that in mind. Go to our website, taltoa.com, TALTOA.com. Look on our information and articles page. There's a ton of information on that. All right, going to take a quick break. Come back with your calls, 646-787-8296, number to dial. If you'd like to be on Broker Talk, have questions, want to discuss something, feel free to do so. And we're going to be talking about selling. You're a freight broker. You've got to make sales. That's coming up around the corner.
Why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Having trouble finding Connor's middle school? Would you like directions?
No, why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Finding lowest airfare to Istanbul.
No, I'm tired of fighting with him over homework.
Home, walk, restaurant. Need a review?
No, I need help. He's very smart, but his mind wanders. He's disorganized.
I think I understand.
Oh, good.
Finding best potatoes for French fries.
No!
Russet, fingerling, Yukon gold.
Why don't you understand me?
Sorry, I was trying to show how Connor feels every day. Frustrating, isn't it? Redirecting to understood.org.
For the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues, this is what life can feel like. Explore understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues, designed to help your child thrive in school and in life. Understood.org, because understanding is everything.
Brought to you by understood.org and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to Broker Talk. I'm Michael, the lead consultant for Taltoa, who produces Broker Talk. You can hear Broker Talk every Monday on Blog Talk Radio at 7 p.m. All right. Now, we've been talking about the ELDs, the Wall Street Journal article. We've talked about how to become a freight broker, freight broker agent, and made our recommendations. Matter of fact, if you're thinking about becoming a freight broker or freight broker agent, check out our website. We have a lot of information, articles. There's videos up there. You can see all the different packages we offer, freight broker agent training, freight broker, those getting their own authority. We have consulting packages with training, and we also do marketing such as web design, video, audio production, and such. Feel free to check us out. Call us if we can help you or if you have any questions. All right, we're going to finish up this first episode of Broker Talk with some tips. As a freight broker, you are essentially a salesperson. You're selling the shipper on using your services. You're getting loads from the shipper. And in turn, you are selling trucking companies the loads you have available from your shippers. I was going through different videos and audios and things like audio today about selling, and I came across one video, and it's from visiongroupmn.com. and it's talking about effective selling. Now, during training, we provide our clients instruction on how to make a sales call to a shipper. We also go into detail about how to sell a load to a trucking company. Pretty much everything you're doing as a freight broker is over the telephone. Now, this audio you're going to hear, it's talking about being an effective salesperson, but it's pretty much referring to one-on-one sales, in-person type selling, and that's fine. But there's a lot of great information in this audio that will help you, even as a freight broker, making sales over the telephone. Let's take a listen.
We'd like to tell you a story about a salesperson. Meet Chris. Everyone said Chris was made for sales. He was outgoing, persistent. His view of sales was that it was merely a matter of convincing people, persuading them, and overcoming their objections. It was all just a numbers game. Chris found a company with products he believed in. So his new company gave him training and all the tools. They told him exactly what he needed to do. But at the end of the day, he still had to be committed to knocking on over 100 doors a day. Chris does this, and here is one of his typical sales calls. Chris shows up and has only one thing on his mind. I need to sell. The buyer, on the other hand, not so enthusiastic. He's thinking, what do I need to do to not get sold to? So Chris starts the sales call, and he begins delivering his pitch, and you know what? He sounds like every other salesperson there ever was, because he uses the script and training that his company gave him. He doesn't do anything personally to connect with the prospect. He's just the company figurehead, telling this innocent and hapless prospect exactly what his company wanted him to tell the prospect, what the company does, and why they're the best. What Chris doesn't realize is that the buyer is trying to figure out who he is, who the salesperson is. Is this a trustworthy guy? Is this guy out for his own good or mine? Chris helps the prospect answer those questions because he acts like everyone else, and therefore reinforces the stereotypes. Chris is unaware of how the prospect sees him. He believed he had to be Superman, parachuting in with all the answers. The prospect quickly becomes uncomfortable, crosses his arms, and puts up a salesperson barrier. Chris keeps motoring along, not realizing that all of his talking points are just getting deflected. Even questions aren't getting through. To the prospect, he's just another salesman. And we quickly get to the end of the sales call. No thanks. I'm just looking. When he hears those words, Chris's shoulders sag and all the air goes out of him. In the back of the prospect's mind, the whole time has been the idea that the seller's gain is my loss. And Chris, by sticking to a canned script, never got through that barrier. He just didn't connect. Undeterred, Chris would knock on more doors. And he repeated this over. Over and over again. He was doing exactly what his company wanted of him. He used the training they gave him, and he followed their model. And he said to himself, I better get used to it. It's all just a numbers game. You know, Chris actually did make some sales, not because he was that great, but because when you knock on that many doors, you're bound to make some sales. But the rejections kept mounting, and he realized that he couldn't keep doing this. So what he did was reflect back on the sales he actually had made, and he realized that in each of these sales, a connection had been formed with his buyer. He needed a way to put this into practice more often. So he decided to become a student of the game, and he wanted to find out, how can I get on the same wavelength with a prospect? How can I emotionally connect with someone on a human level, on purpose? The first thing Chris put his arms around was empathizing with the buyer's skepticism. He realized they put up barriers for very good reasons, and there had to be a way around those barriers. Next, he wanted to know how people made decisions, specifically buying decisions, and this led him to study the human mind. He learned about the left and right sides of the brain. The left is logical, rational, skeptical. It's adept with numbers and information, but it's the side of the brain that says no. The right side, however, well, that's creative, imaginative, visual. It's the side of the brain where we build trust. It's also the side of the brain where we say yes. He found the pathway, that would get him around the left side and into the buyer's right side. And it was storytelling. It was a way for him to create an emotional connection, a way to educate, to inspire, to be hopeful. It was a way to build trust. He then realized he needed to learn the basic principles of storytelling, how to construct and deliver a well-thought-out narrative. He learned how to craft stories using a proven, universal structure of storytelling. He begins to build himself a toolkit of stories for any sales scenario. Stories about himself, about his company, how a client could use his company's offerings, about other clients and successes that they've had in the past, and about lessons learned. Storytelling alone wasn't the end, it was the means. He had to get the buyer's story, and he quickly saw that he was not a good listener. He learned he had to listen with more than just his ears. He had to incorporate sight so that he was in tune with the other person's feelings. He had to pay attention to body language. He was given an active listening model that contained the building blocks he could use in real life. The result? He became a more purposeful listener. Now Chris goes back into the field with a new approach. First, he recognizes his prospect's skepticism. Then he relaxes and tells his prospect a story about another person he's helped in the past. That then invites the prospect to tell him a story, and he actively listens. He finds out there's now an open exchange of information and new ideas. An emotional connection has been formed. He then realizes he can repeat this over and over again.
You see, that audio, what they were talking about, it actually makes sense. You've got to connect with whomever you're selling to. You've got to connect on a personal level. We go into detail about that during the training, be it you're selling to a shipper, selling to a trucking company. It's all about the relationships, hitting that emotional cord where you're able to build that relationship. The better the relationship, the more load you're going to get, the more load you're going to move, the more money you're going to make. And isn't that the bottom line? You've been listening to Broker Talk. We do it every Monday, 7 o'clock Central Time, here on Blog Talk Radio. You can also hear a replay, as we will post it on our website at taltowa.com. If you're thinking about becoming a freight broker, freight broker agent, maybe you're a trucking company, want to start learning how to get your own loads so you're not having to deal with a broker as much, hey, check out our website, taltoa.com, taltoa.com. You can also call us, 800-582-4167. I've been a little congested tonight. I've been fighting whatever this is for 3 or 4 weeks now. Hopefully next week I'll be on the other side and back to normal. So appreciate your patience with me tonight. Have a good night, and we will talk to you soon. Feel free to call me if you have any questions about working as a freight broker, freight broker agent. Like to know more about our packages. You can also email us at brokertalk@taltowa.com. That's brokertalk@taltowa.com. Have a great week. Until next week, hey, let's get out there and make some money, huh? Talk to you soon.